Oh my goodness. It is Friday. It is Friday Roundtable. It is March 22nd already, people. Can you believe this? 2024. Somebody said to me last night in a session, they said, oh my word, it is the craziest year that they can ever think of in existence. Person makes very good money, has a great job, and they're like, oh my word, like things are so expensive. Politicians are so disconnected and all of these other things. And I know usually what we do is we throw out an article, which I did. Mm-hmm. I put out articles this week.
You did.
And so maybe Miss Rebecca can just take, you know, one of the articles and just post it. And then y'all can just read about it. And then you can pretend what we would all say.
I can do that. And
I can tell you right now, if she posts the one on genetics and people having affairs and cheating and so on, well, you know what? If people in a family are known as having short fuses, or people in a family are known for a lot of other things, you know what? The genetics for the predisposition to wanting the chase, wanting to see the fireworks every day. Yeah, no surprise there. Fascinating article. So, I don't know. Do you want to post that one?
I can post that one.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
It was very interesting.
Got any more words?
I just hope it doesn't give people an excuse to have affairs.
Well, people come up with excuses to have affairs all the time.
They do.
Yeah, which kind of leads into why I'm like, hey, why? We should just talk about what Sherry started to talk about as we sat down. Because, you know, why not? It's about people all over the place. And you just segued this, Rebecca, perfectly without even being aware of it. Because you just said, I hope it doesn't give people an excuse. Which, you know, okay, so Sherry, what did you throw out on the table for just a little bit of discussion before we turn the mics on?
Well, I think if I remember what I said correctly, it was about how everybody is so stressed and...
I think your words were people are screwed.
And falling to in droves.
And I think your words were, and we are all screwed.
And we are all screwed.
Because of Bill...
124, which is a bill that was passed in the provincial government during COVID or pre-COVID. I'm not even sure anymore.
Pre-COVID.
It was pre-COVID.
It was okay. Pre-COVID.
Which controlled the wages of hospital sector employees down to 1% per year.
And so, yeah, that was before COVID, I believe. And then at COVID, they were like, well, hey, you know what? We'll throw you a bone. We'll throw you an extra couple of percent here and there. We'll throw you some danger pay, or we'll throw you some, I don't know, whatever it was they were going to do. But yeah, but this 1% has been in place for quite some time.
Yeah, it's been, I think, 4 years, maybe even five it was in. And then last year, it got repealed as unconstitutional. And as a result... all of the hospitals have had to make up all kinds of money, gone through renegotiations with unions, had to compensate all the non-union employees aligned with the unions. And what the ramifications are is that all the hospitals are really, really suffering from these astronomical wage increases in a very short period of time. So I think... my heart goes out to all the finance people in the hospitals right now, because what they're dealing with is hell. Trying to find money where there is no money.
What do you mean?
Well, because with the bill in place, the actual budgets that are dictated by the province, so the amount of money that's given to the hospitals, and hospitals can only spend what they are given. They don't have a real other source of income. Our foundations are fantabulous in helping us out on capital expenses. There's some amazing stuff that goes on. But for the day-to-day operational expenses, that's determined by what pot of money the government determines you get. And those were held at a certain level to align with the bill that was in place. And now they've been told that that bill was wrong. And so... even though the money they've been allotted hasn't increased, they have to give all this money to employees.
Well, according to the news, if y'all want to believe the news or not, but according to the news, Public Health Ontario which is one of these organizations that is affected by this. Apparently, their union employees have been granted an extra 0.75% retroactive back to 2020, another 0.75% for 2021. And this is retroactive pay, people, so it's compounding. So it's 0.75%, and then the next year it's 1.5% compounding. And so, and another 0.75 for 2021, and an additional 3.75 for 2022. So y'all add those up. That's a whole lot of an increase compounding back before COVID.
Yep.
Wow.
And that all had to come out last year and this year. So where's the money coming from? It doesn't grow on trees, last time I checked.
Hallway medicine.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely out there. No question. Yeah, it's sad that a policy went through that was so wrong, and now everybody's paying the price for it. Because there's no way that we can keep.
And that's where what I said when we're talking about this, we might as well just talk about this, because you know what people always want to do is they want to pass the buck. Mm-hmm. So go back to what Rebecca said about, I hope this doesn't give people an excuse to have an affair. People don't need an excuse. And people don't need an excuse to try to take advantage of. You know, you go back to the days of the Romans. Anybody who's ever been to Rome, which I had the privilege of being there once, And I stood in the amphitheater and I looked around and I thought about the tens of thousands of people that they said would sit in here and cheer on the torture and the killing of another human being for pure pleasure, you know, because animals would come out, all these things would happen. It was just, you know, they talked about the cages underneath. And again, you know, for nothing but the spirit of watching somebody else die or somebody else be maimed or you know, and quite honestly, death was a common thing from what I remember of the tour and what I've read before and since. And so people, honest to goodness, if y'all think that there's some sort of a big conspiracy theory out there, seriously, wipe the sleep out of your eyes. People have been screwing people over since the Romans and before. This isn't new, folks. This is not new stuff. So just, again, take a real big deep breath and look around. People in power have wanted power forever, and they've wanted power to tell you how incredible your world is going to be, while they sit back and they go, huh, somebody else's problem now.
Mm-hmm. And things change. And then what happened before becomes another problem. Somebody else's problem, just like you said. So where do we go?
It always goes to the next generation to fix.
But it's not even the next generation, people. Like, honestly, it's not. Because what we're talking about here isn't the next generation. We're talking about the people literally right in front of us, our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, because the next generation always gives this illusion that the next generation is 20 years away or 30 years away or 40 years away. Well, there's several generations of people in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in their 60s and somebody in their 20s is not from the same generation, but yet they're still in the same workforce together. And so this whole idea, oh, well, the next generation. No, no, no. You're not talking about the next generation, people. You're talking about the people right here today. You're talking about the people who are in the workforce today. And you're talking about the old folks who are... Yeah, I didn't swear there. I know it sounded like I was gonna, but I didn't. But the old folks, no, it really truly is this idea of, oh no, no, the next generation. No. It's this generation. This generation is here now. And so, you know, again, folks, where this came from is because I was looking at Sherry because, you know, we were just wrapping stuff up so we could sit down and do this. And I looked at Sherry and I'm like, oh my God, you look like you're sleeping and sitting there. And she's, well, you know, a little bit tired. And then, you know, and I said, so what's been going on? And so she had a meeting last night and, you know, all over the place, people are doing this. They're having meetings and they're having budget meetings and they're trying to pass budgets that they're not going to get passed. And they're not going to get passed because, hey, folks, by the way, did you look around? Like, things are up 6%, 6, 10%. Things are up 20%. Things are up 40%. Year over year, the cost for a divorce, the cost for everything. Oh, yeah, but we're going to be good. We're going to take away the license plate fee. Seriously?
It doesn't quite make up for it, does
no.
it?
No. And what are we going to head back to? We're going to head back to hallway medicine.
Yep. We're not going to have the funds to pay for good quality care because we're going to have lost that ability. And it's very frustrating. There's a lot of very frustrated people. Nobody in the healthcare industry wants to deliver poor care. Nobody wants to cut services or do anything like that. And
nobody?
Nobody who's delivering care.
Nobody?
That I know of.
Nobody.
Well, okay. An absolute is probably not the right thing to be saying.
I'm going to guarantee you I know some middle managers who they truly do not care so long as it's in budget. They really don't care. What they care about is how does it look to the uppers?
Mm-hmm. And I think there's another good point is what is the perspective of people? Are they looking for quality care or are you looking for keeping it within the budget? And how do you reconcile the two of them? It's not easy.
I don't know all the details, but a young lady who I went to school with, elementary school and high school, nurse practitioner who worked in orthopedics, and I'm not going to say where she worked, but she worked in orthopedics as a nurse practitioner, and the shit show of people stomping on top of other people, you know, instead of the best possible care, and you know, again, you know.
And one of the things that happens, and I'm going to guess that she was probably thinking along this line, is when you start to get creative on ways of delivering quality care, but trying to do it differently, you then get caught up in other perspectives where they want to keep everybody in the same path instead of trying something new.
Rebecca, you got to have a story or two of how you looked at stuff in long-term care and went, oh, damn, I could do this a bit different. Because I tell you, I guarantee you, folks, when I worked in long-term care when I first graduated in sort of the 10, 11, 12, 13 era of my post-education, there was a lot of things I saw that made no sense to me at all. None.
This might sound bad, okay, but when I was working in long-term care, I tended to work with blinders on for the first little bit. So I kind of purposefully ignored the management and what was going on. I just tried to do my job. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until about 5 years in that I realized, no, this is crap.
What was crap?
The short staff. Always short staffed. Lack of funds for the residents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the poor residents that pay the price.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So then after long-term care, I felt really bad for leaving, but it wasn't doing me any good either. So I went to home care, which has its own fallbacks.
Okay. And so if you think about just institutional care and again, people, this is not an article. This is the three of us who have worked in institutional care. And you know, the reason why, you know, when somebody sits down with me, somebody sat down here last night and they started pour out their story and I hadn't seen them in likely the best part of a year. And they started to pour out their story and their story just kept pouring out and pouring out. 3.5 hours later, they actually walked up. Did I charge them for 3.5 hours? No, not a chance. I couldn't in all good conscientious, charge them for that because it was an unbelievable journey they were telling me about since they'd walked through the door. Counseling is expensive, and I did what I could to actually be respectful to them. And again, I do that all the time. I try to, whatever I can do to make it affordable. Okay, and so if I went and worked in an institutional setting, it would be like, no, here's your caseload. Here's this. Here's that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking at those numbers going, who the hell comes up with this nonsense?
And the numbers are what drive so many things, unfortunately. And I think that's what Rebecca experienced in long-term care was numbers. Thou shalt have this many staff maximum, irrespective of the acuity or the quality of the care that required by the residents, and you will work within these means. And the beauty of independent practice can be that you can deliver the care that's required in the environment.
It means I don't make the money.
You don't always make the money. You're right.
I honestly would make more money at the end of the year working 37 and a half hours a week, working for an institutional, like working for a hospital or something. At the end of the year, my notice of assessment would, and people, y'all might not believe that, but it's the honest to God truth. Mm-hmm. My notice of assessment, my actual income after everything would actually be higher if I was working for a hospital, working 37 and a half hours a week. Because you got your pension, you've got your benefits, you got all the other stuff that comes with that. I would be but again, to do that means I have to sacrifice. And I'm not interested in all at sacrificing that. Mm-hmm. And so Bill 124, y'all make sure you take care of your health, because what's going to happen? As I said, hallway medicine's coming back. Hospital bed closings are going to come back. All of these things are going to happen.
There's going to be an epiphany. There's going to be some fundamental change, and I don't know that it's all going to be good for us as patients, clients. It's going to be tough.
Oh, hell yeah.
And yeah, I know there's lots of practitioners out there. I know there's lots of people out there trying to do the very, very best for all of their patients and clients, and they are struggling too because they see these cuts. They see the struggles that are going on, and it's so hard. You're not delivering the care that you want to.
So I just want to educate people on one simple thing about the math of long-term care as an example, or the math of anything to do with hospitals. So back in the day, you know, like back in the 80s, they're building nursing homes, and they built them as four-room wards. So an old-style hospital, you'd walk in, there'd be four beds. The only thing dividing them were curtains, not a lot of square footage, right? Like the whole idea was, you're not there for a long time, and you're not going to be bringing in your creature comforts. And so, and the hallway was shorter, so you had 32 residents, and those 32 residents were confined into a much smaller space. So that's an old C-style facility today. You take the exact same facility today that's being built as an A. Okay, so A means that there's air conditioning in all the rooms. A means that the doorways are wider. It means that there's more floor space for everybody. That a ward room is actually now two people in one room with a curtain, and then there's adjoining bathroom, and then two people in another room. Okay, so that sounds beautiful, doesn't it? Oh my God, that's better for mom and dad. That's better for everybody. Guess what, folks? The same number of cleaning staff, the same number of PSWs to give help, to give assistance, now have to walk twice as far because the square footage, the hallways are twice as wide. Everything is just that much further away. And so if you were running your butt off, which I've seen them run their butts off in a C, but to get from room to room, very short run. You go into an A today, you have twice the distance to run. You have twice the distance to do everything, and the cleaning staff have twice the floor space to clean. And so double the size of your house, double the size of everything, double the size of your gas tank, double everything, and then tell me how much you like to pay for that. And unfortunately, that's what the government's done, is the government has said, we're going to double the size of everything for long-term care, and then we're going to give you the exact same staff ratio as a C. It makes no sense, people. No sense at all.
And we continually try to do more because we got the bigger space with the same amount, and it just doesn't work.
And so then here we go with, you know, again, like Sherry, you know, she was trying to, you were presenting part of what you do for your real job, not just the stuff you do here for Black Sheep, rebrand it, but again, you were doing what you needed to last night budget wise, and you know, working. There's no overtime. There's no anything. It's just burn the candle at both ends and push, and then push a little tiny bit harder, and then oh my word.
Yep. And I mean, I'm fortunate. I've got some great managers and higher ups that I work with, but not everybody has that flexibility, and I'm fortunate that I'm able to flex my time. Not everybody gets to do that. And in these days, it's going to be less and less, so we're going to be able to do less and less.
Do you really think you actually flex all of your time?
I know I don't.
So do you even say those words? Seems a little bit hypocritical.
I guess that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and earlier today I was saying to Rebecca, you know, like we're seeing tough times, people walking through the doors, and we're seeing it, you know, in the last minute bookings and all the things that are going on in business for us. And I said to Rebecca, I said, you know, it's tough because, you know, trying to balance out payrolls and trying to balance out everything is tough. We are really pulling at our wits' ends, trying to make all of this stuff work. And it just doesn't make any sense.
And I think, just like I said earlier, I think something is going to change here. And I wish I understood what, but the costs of everything are still going up. The work that's required is going up. So just onto in healthcare again, because I can't get off the healthcare theme, the aging of the population is driving up the need for healthcare. Yet at the same time, the cost is driving down the ability to serve and the ability to deliver the care that we need. And I don't know.
Okay, but some of the stats in Ontario are saying that right now, because of immigration, there's all kinds of millennials because of immigration.
And that is actually probably a lot of what we're starting to see in healthcare is we're seeing more people from that are immigrating. Who have immigrated in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. What's the
Especially in.
For PSWs?
PSWs. I know that those, even some RNs that have to pass more exams, and so they've been working as PSWs too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of the.
They're trying to download their own sense of burden that they're carrying. They went into nursing to give frontline care. And it's changing.
Mm-hmm. It's an evolution is happening. There's no question. What that's going to look like 5-10 years from now, I don't know. But it's not going to be the same as today by any stretch.
It's kind of scary.
Why?
The unknown.
What do you mean the unknown? We've been living in the unknown. Yeah, I think that this is one of the things that makes my little portion of the universe a little bit maybe rose-colored, because I don't expect anything to be the same tomorrow. I really don't. I live like I'm trying to be a good little Boy Scout with, you know, 50 little backup plans in my pocket every day, because honestly, when I look around at the world, I try not to count on a whole awful lot, because I again, governments, everywhere you look. Things are changing. I was sent a funny thing the other day, right? Where, you know, we pay tax on our income tax, and then we pay tax on our food, and we pay tax on our gas, and we pay tax, and we pay tax, and we pay tax on top of our tax, and we're taxing on top of our tax, just so that we can send our money and do things for other countries, where it's like, well, what are we doing for here? Well, we have a social and moral responsibility to the rest of the world. Sure. Does the rest of the world have a moral and ethical responsibility to us? And this is, again, where does the giving stop? And I'm sure this is going to ruffle people's feathers, and they're going to go, oh my word, we need to do this. We need to be good people on the world stage. Yeah, you're right. But to what limit and to what extent?
That's actually comes right back to everyday life too. Mm-hmm. What are our limits? How do we control them? I mean, you're talking about society or mm-hmm. country limits.
Yeah.
But we equally have a problem at the individual level of saying no.
I'm going to bring up, this is going to sound like, again, it's a whole bunch of math, folks. But if you take an orange helicopter, right? So Orange Ambulance here in Ontario that does the helicopter and plane service for Northern Ontario and helicopter for Southern Ontario. When you take an Orange helicopter and there's an accident, and so you call and Orange, you know, is notified and Orange dispatch helicopter, the helicopter, you know, gets pulled out of the shed, rotor spins, everybody takes off. It's halfway to the accident scene. And then somebody says, no, I don't think it's that critical. Then they take that patient and they start transporting by ground. And then they go, oh, we actually need Orange back. Just the math, folks. If the helicopter had stayed in flight because somebody was sure that they needed the helicopter to start with, it would actually be more cost effective than to turn the helicopter around, it land, and then it stops, and then you have to fire it back up again. It's like your car. It takes more energy to get it moving than it does once it is moving. Helicopters are unique because that rotor does have to spin to keep it in the air. But once it's in motion, once it's off the ground, it uses and consumes less power per mile of or per kilometer of travel or per 1,000 feet of lift for it to climb. It's less fuel. But people, oh, no, we'll save some money. We'll send the helicopter back. Oh, look at that. You just went from a $50,000 helicopter ride for that person to a $200,000 ride for that person because all of a sudden the redirection and this and that. And this is where, again, where is the true big picture looking? Because, and again, I've got Orange paramedics who are clients of mine, and the frustration that they feel is unbelievable because they see this where people are going, no, we're going to save money. We'll send the helicopter back. When in actuality, you more than double the cost of that same patient transfer. You more than double the cost because the helicopter takes off, gets halfway there, turns around, flies back, lands, mm-hmm. powers down. Okay. And maintenance is based on running hours and start cycles.
Which you just increased, you just doubled them.
And so therefore, mm-hmm. folks, and this is where we live in this society, again, where it's just like, well, it's endless amounts of money. It's endless amounts of everything. The last 20 years of basically free money, I think has really skewed a lot of people to thinking. And again, well, the government, well, we're going to save money. So we're going to dictate that you only get a 1%. Okay, well, then in a few years, what happens? Exactly what's happening right now. Who can afford this stuff? Oh, the next generation will pay for it. Folks, the next generation is right here, right in front of you.
Exactly. We got to do a hell of a lot better of doing things with the money that we have and looking at how to do things differently. I don't think we're going to see huge increases in money. I do think that we have to revisit how we're doing things. I'm not sure what that looks like, though.
I know there's been two times when I've been at an accident and I've been on the phone and I've said, you know, this is what's needed and this is what's needed and this is what's needed. And two times I've said, and a helicopter was needed. And both times when Orange landed, it was needed. I've been at other accidents where I've just come across and I've been like, nope. And somebody's going to say, well, you're not a paramedic. You're right. I'm not a doctor. You're right. But I'm not stupid. G-forces, collateral damage, the things that are flying around. Again, and asking people. Talking.
And that is a theme that we've talked about here many times. How we forget here, to use our words.
Here at Black Creek? Or Black Sheep? Or Black whatever we are?
Sometimes we get our words messed up.
Oh my God. There is a Black Creek around here. We should have named it Black Creek, Black Sheep.
But yeah, we do forget to use our words sometimes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I think that comes right back again to why we waste money, not just on healthcare, but on many other things. Because we don't use those words to really narrow down, hone in on what it is we need. We go out and we say something and somebody responds by getting something and they may not get the right thing. And then they have to go back, more money spent on gas or whatever, and to either take it back and get something else or you buy something else on top of what you bought the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember family members telling me I was going to burn in hell from going into a nursing home. First of all, that's a whole nother story. I did my piece. But people said to me, you know, you're going to burn in hell. Literally, people tell me I was going to burn in hell, and mom would never get good care, and mom would never this, and mom would that. Well, you know what? I made sure mom was in the best possible facility and made sure that she had the best possible care that she could. And then I gladly walked away and washed my hands and hey, y'all know better than me and y'all think I'm going to burn in hell. Have at it. Knock yourself out. But their concerns were real and their concerns were genuine. And so again, as family members who are actively involved, your loved one is likely going to get better care. There's no doubt about it. But the burden to take somebody on 24/7, I've got some clients who, God love them, man. I walked into their house and my word, what a lovely house. And I walked into, these people's worlds and I went, wow, you guys live in this amazing property. Oh my God. It is a nursing home of one-on-one care 24/7 with these poor kids that need their mom and they need their dad. And they got suction machines and they got tube feeds and they got everything going on. It looked like a nursing home. It no longer looked like a house. And again, they're burnt out. They are so done in. And so again, so private duty nursing, all these other things, we are trapped in a vicious, vicious cycle. But honest to goodness, like people not getting real about expenses. And people also, again, smoke and mirrors. We're going to give you free license plate tags. Yeah, well, we're going to also give you hallway medicine again. And so again, the equity of what should be taxed and how it should be taxed. And again, so, you know, Rebecca, give a few words on your thoughts of why you don't want to be a PSW anymore. Because that was... You know, you went to school for a lot of different things, and then you were like, you just kind of settled on it. You went, all right, I can do this. So give a few words on why you don't want to go down that road again.
Because I don't really feel like I'm helping anybody anymore. I shouldn't say that, because you always help people, but you're not helping to the most effective use of your time, which you always try to be effective.
Okay, well, who are you to determine the best effective use of your time?
That's true.
No.
But I just...
Okay, but go further. You are the person to be that determinant, but what makes you the person to be qualified to say this is the most effective use of my time? If I can help you out here, right? Because the look on her face, folks, is like, oh, shit, he's just put me on the spot. I had a lot of people, beautiful people, hardworking, dedicated, run their butts off people go, these are people... These are not auto parts. We're not there to just wash them and send them down the line to air dry. And we have no time to treat them like a human being. We feel like we're treating them like a part on an assembly line. You know, dinner starts at this time. Dinner is done at this time. You shove the food in. Get with it.
And one size does not fit all. And you, as the PSW, can probably identify what size somebody needs better than I can sitting from the, on the side.
Yep.
Could you do that as a PSW?
People wouldn't listen to us.
What do you mean?
We'd tell them that somebody needed a certain size of clothes to be comfortable sitting down with a brief on. It takes up extra space. Well, they always got the smaller size because they didn't think that they were that big. And it wasn't the fact that they were that big. It's just that sitting down all day, things get bunchy and you need the extra material and stuff. And
simple thing, really.
Yeah. Or just the size of the briefs. People aren't made the same way. All like, we're different proportions. And just because somebody measurements say that they should be a certain size of brief, it doesn't necessarily equate to this.
That where their lumps are is a little bit different from person to person. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And that's another thing that we would try and get across. And they're like, nope, they fit the measurements for this size brief. This is what they're going to be getting. Well, that leaves red marks.
Like, and then the red marks turn into bed sores.
Yeah.
And the bed sores turn into infections. And the infections turn into...
hospital stays.
And the cycle goes on.
Mm-hmm. And it started with the PSW, who identified that they needed something different. But the voice of the PSW is not being heard from the sounds of it.
No. That was another big thing, is not being heard.
So these are the sorts of things that we need to see if we can't do better at. Look at them differently. Get the voices of the people who actually know up and where they can be heard.
Yeah, but how to do that? That's the tricky part.
It's never going to happen because of ego.
There's definitely an ego piece to it. No Absolutely. Question.
Absolutely.
But
we've been trying for thousands of years, folks. Thousands of years we've been trying to get away from the caste system, the class system. We have been trying forever to get away from all these different systems. And unfortunately, I remember talking to people who were very, very aware cognitively, they had really sharp minds and had lots of success. But due to MS or due to other things, they were now in long-term care homes. And I remember one person saying to me, prison would be better because there'd be more rules that everyone would have to follow.
Would rules make it better? Or what do you mean by rules?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and ask them. That was just what they said. That they, in their opinion, long-term care, prison would have been better because there would have been more rules for people would have had to follow. More rules for when you had a shower, more rules, and more opportunity for independence. Independence of thought, independence of action, independence of whatever. Because again, you know, unfortunately, the system is broken. Mm-hmm. The education system, folks, is no different. Mm-hmm. Like, truly, it's no different. And unfortunately, we live in this age and in this time when it's like, man, oh man. And so, yeah. So, hey, folks, this has been our Friday afternoon. It was going to be an article discussion, but it's not an article discussion. It was just a discussion about three people, you know, doing a little bit of venting. Hopefully you became a little bit more educated about, you know, legislation, about Bill
124.
Oh, my word. Yeah. And that bill was passed a number of years ago, and it was determined to be unlawful. Mm-hmm. And so when it was passed, it was, we're going to rein in the financial catastrophes from previous governments. And that was the Ford government who actually, I believe, brought that in. And when it was brought in, we have to rein in the expenses, the reckless spending of the Liberal government. We have to rein all this stuff in. So we're going to pass this stuff. And you know what? Well, here they are. The Ford government created a bigger nightmare. So instead of paying a little bit as we went and doing things as they were intended to be done, nope, we're just going to pass the buck. We're going to step on people. We're going to squash people's rights. And quite honestly, Sherry, my heart goes out to you. My heart goes out to your boss, to the people higher up in the hospitals that you're associated with, because it is a tough situation. But quite frankly, I'm glad that people are going, what the hell are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Because it does have to trickle back to saying, governments, y'all can't just be spending money and giving money away. And quite honestly, you blame Doug Ford all day long, but where the problem really lies is the federal government with medical transfers of and the financial transfers between the federal government and the provinces. And that's where the problem really lies, folks. And so are there problems provincially? Absolutely. Am I for any one political party? Absolutely not. But I am glad that this reality is, you know, because
maybe there'll be an impetus for change.
It's going to be an impetus for change. But like you said, is the change going to be change that's going to be good? Or is it going to be a little bit out of control and a little bit catastrophic? And my guess is it's going to be a little bit out of control, a little bit catastrophic. And I've been saying to a lot of people for a long time, for several years. And honestly, I think before the summer of 2024, I think we're going to see some really, really big shifts in this world. And again, I don't know where they're going to be exactly. Not a fortune teller, but it's just a little spidey sense that's going on saying, man, oh man, there's some stuff.
Everything's vibrating right now. We don't know what'll happen.
So Anybody else got anything else to say? You want to add anything, Rebecca?
No, I'm good.
Thank you for letting me vent. I appreciate the talk.
All right. All right. Well, hey, folks. Rebecca's putting the music up. I guess that means it's time for me to zip it. Those words spoken to me many times. Zip it, Rick. Hey, everybody. Again, Rick Sherwood here from Black Sheep Rebranded. And again, thank you very much for tuning into this Friday roundtable discussion on, what are we going to call this? I think we're going to call this Bill 124 and the reality of financial limits of life. Because you know what? When people read the title, they're going to go, well, that sounds boring. Maybe it is boring, but maybe you'll read the title and you'll go, no, I actually want to hear what they have to say about this. Because again, it is a crisis that is going to affect us all. Because eventually, I'm gonna die, and everybody else here is going to die. And we all are going to have a bit of a cold between now and the time we die. And hopefully the medical system in Ontario, in Canada, and in your country will be there for you. So again, from Black Sheep Rebranded, Rebecca, Sherry, and myself. Oh, and guess what? Jake has been in the studio here the whole time. He's been sleeping right here beside me with his butt squished up against me. So apparently he's all into Bill 124 as well. So everybody, be good. Have a great weekend. We'll chat on Monday. Bye-bye.